That's Flaming Ember, and get on board the westbound number 9. Now, status quo's Francis Rossi, no stranger to this show. We've chatted many times over the years, often with his late bandmate and friend Rick Parfitt. Recently, Francis has been overseeing a new best-of album called Cloying In, and the band begin a UK tour in a few days' time. The origins of status quo go way back to 1962, but they really hit their stride in the 1970s. They didn't do things by halves and managed to put out an album every single year of the decade. And when you combine that with all the tours and writing the material, that's quite a work ethic. Francis, how on earth did you get so much done?
I don't know. When you look at it like that, you think, well, it surely wasn't possible. But I think we made Power Driver when we did that in 3 weeks. And so the songs would be routine and such. You know, we got more and more spoiled, all of us, as time had gone by. And then we're more spoiled now because we have computers and such that you can mess things around with it. Young people can do all sorts of stuff. But you were young, we were all going somewhere. The entire business was burgeoning and everyone's very up on it. And no one was blasé about it and hadn't got as far as it's gotten now. So to make another album, you went in and did it in 2 or 3 weeks and out you came. And we went in, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning, came out at midnight. But yeah, that's how it was then. Everyone seemed to do that.
There was that time in the 1970s when status quo, this pop band wearing all these brightly colourful clothes and going on Top of the Pops. And then suddenly it's worn out denim and stuff. And they're kind of a rock and roll, you know, hardcore boogie band.
Yeah, it was. At the point being, I think if you go back to 65 or 66, that we were kind of mods. You know, that was the thing to me. And that's why I still wear that Windsor tie and the button gown collars and such. And then there was a period that the mod thing seemed to drift into that Carnaby Street kind of clothing thing. I did look like an Italian waiter in one of those sort of frock coats. Everybody was wearing that stuff. And then that suddenly, because at the end of the decade, it became like yesteryear, and we couldn't get arrested for some time. We did try, and so the idea of walking around, going on stage in the same clothes that you turned up in was kind of wild, and you didn't shave, and it was kind of strange what you thought was wild then. You know, all denim. They went on in denim. Different times, isn't it?
You picked a track called "Is There a Better Way." Now, if you go on YouTube. And you read the comments under that. And the comments are saying, you know, status quo, massively underrated band. They were just one of the great bands with that, you know, the great lineup, the original lineup.
It goes with the time, though. There was something going on at that time. And the band, which kind of weren't necessarily progressive, but within the rearrangements and the songs, and, you know, with Is There a Better Way and Slow Train and 4500 Times and those protracted tunes. You just did that stuff, and it became, I don't think we're, I can't say under, and the status quo fans obviously feel that way about them. But like with every act, and if you're not a fan, you're just kind of, I don't know who they are, I don't much like them, whoever it is, it's just that we get focused on certain acts. But it's undoubtedly that decade, and possibly the next decade, was a very important time in music, and it just can't be there now. As much as you and I would love it to be like that, it probably can't be because, you know, you've opened the box now. It's a bit too late. We've seen it all.
And a great track called Is There a Better Way from the album Blue For You that came out in 1976, and a song written by Alan Lancaster and my guest on Sounds of the 70s this afternoon. And Francis, what do you remember about writing that song?
Well, I just moved into the area that I'm still in now, and he was in Causton just around the corner. He was going to writing day and I wasn't much looking forward to it. And him and I had a very good, we wrote a few things on that album which were quite interesting, that song being probably the most interesting. The solo goes into a very much a 3-4 sort of waltzy kind of thing. And that's where I think, if we dare use that word progressive, we progressed within what we were doing and in the arrangements. And everything out there got faster. And so you needed, and the same with selling records, you needed X amount of time, get it in there and get it as commercial as possible. And it seemed to drift away from protracted arrangements and such. I think a lot of it went that way. And then you later on we moved into New Romantics, and that completely changed the thing. And we became anachronists, and then you were just passe again. And I think that happens to a lot of older bands. Every decade or so, you become passe and you try and hang on to the latest sound or the latest whatever people are wearing.
Now, you mentioned complex arrangements. We could bring ELO in there, the song that you've selected, called Stepping Out.
Oh, yeah, do they? Whenever I was close to a hero, I met him when I was 15 or 16. We used to see him a lot as I had a race, and I've had nights out with him in Birmingham and such. But he's the most delightful man, very humble man, and far too talented for his own good, as far as I'm concerned. So I hate him and love him at the same time.
Stepping Out, and I guess Francis Rossi talking of spending some time with Jeff Lynne. It's interesting you say kind of love him and hate him, because those days it was very competitive, wasn't it?
It was, but we were very friendly. You know, I said in probably 66 or 67, we were doing circuits and you were doing doubles. He'd be coming out, so I'd have a few minutes chat, and then you'd see him next week somewhere else in various bands like that. But even so, that's still that period where it was friendly. You were kind of muckers. And then it became far more serious or cutthroat, I suppose. But it was logical it was going to do that. Everything has to get more out of it, more out of it, be more serious and more competitive with each other. The idea when you're on a bill is you make it as hard as possible for the next guy to follow you, whatever you can do to get out of that audience. And if you could stay on longer, you would. That's how it came about. Whereas in the 60s, and those package tours with Gene Pitney and such, you're all just friends together. You did your stint and you came off. But it got far more serious, which I think is good. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, nostalgia is a wonderful thing. Because I remember going to see those package tours and everybody kind of did their 15 minutes.
That's it.
And then I remember the boss of Atlantic Records in the UK was saying to the Stax people and Atlantic people in America, listen, if we really want to launch this music over here, everybody's got to come out of the studio and come on tour. And Booker T and the MGs were a band that never used to go out and do gigs. And then suddenly around Europe, the Stax tour of Europe, and you'd have Sam and Dave going out there doing this incredible show and making it as difficult as possible for Otis Redding to follow them.
Right, that's the whole gig in the end. Well, I think that was good for it. I'm not sure that it did good for music, but it did good for large shows because you kept setting that bar higher and higher. And subsequently now we have such ridiculous shows, light shows and stage shows of what comes on and what goes off.
What about touring now? I mean, how do you tour now in terms of the sort of, do you have lots of lights? Do you have any lasers or is it just good sound?
You have to have some kind of light show. I remember the competition between us and Queen, and it was healthy competition at the time, to see who had the most lamps on stage, and they were Parkans at the time. And anybody knows about Parkans, they were so hot, so the heat raining down on you is phenomenal. But now you've got smoothing lights, so you can have just about anything. But there was a guy said to me years ago, George Harvey, a lighting designer we had, he said, nobody goes home whistling the lights. But for certain acts, that's a contradiction because if you went to see Floyd, you want to see that spectacle going on or various other acts. And certain bands, it'll do like AC/DC, maybe up to us and various like Stones. You don't need you're just hearing the music, each to his own, I suppose. But we have a reasonable light rig. And of course, there is budgets to think of. We have these fabulous excuses these days since 2018-19. It's Brexit, COVID, Putin. These are the reasons that this has gone up. This is more expensive. We can't do this. We can't have that. We can't have this. But generally, we are just a rock band that tries to do it each night. And most times, for us and usually the audience, it works really well. I'm so looking forward to doing this winter run. In a big, big way, which I have to be careful with.
Now, you've been doing it a long time. So it sounds from what you say, you can, you know, you still get a buzz out of it.
Well, you can. And I think one of the bonuses to when we were younger, when you do have a duff one and you do, for whatever reason, sound-wise, one doesn't perform very well for whatever, you don't feel too clever. I constantly make mistakes. I'm a really good guitar player in my bedroom upstairs at night, most nights. And I've got something goes wrong. You've been there and I've made horrendous mess up, but something when the band gels, and it does gel a lot lately. It reminds me of the early days that we were talking about. And you're looking for that every night.
Well, a lot depends on the crowd and what they sort of give to the stage, doesn't it?
It does, but we can't rest on that and say, well, they weren't very good. In fact, we all do that crowd. We're a bit funny. No. And also certain venues, certain towns, they seem muted compared to Prep. Now, if you went from Glasgow to somewhere in Dresden, you would definitely notice the difference, believe me, and you feel it. However, to them, they're going there having a fantastic time.
Francis, always good to talk to you. Thanks for sparing the time, and enjoy the gigs coming up. And you picked a song from the Eagles. This is one of my favorite songs from them. It's not one that immediately comes to mind when people think of the Eagles. I think it's a really good track.
It's the first one I really heard of theirs. And when they did Hotel California tour, I went to Wembley to see them. And I was not happy until they'd done this song. And I always thought that we could have tried to head somewhat that way, changing the bass line to what they call a root and fit. Dun, 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 dun. But we obviously weren't that good. This is a brilliant, brilliant song. You going to announce it or am I?
Oh, you can.
And this is the Eagles with Already Gone. Yeah.
Brilliant, Francis. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Johnny.